From the dwindling woodpile at Swamp Hill Studios, located in beautiful Turtle River, Minnesota.
Just east of the swamp.
And up the hill a bit, it's the Rito Roundup!
Hello, everybody out there. This is Reed Olson with episode 66, 67? 76, 77 or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the Rito Roundup. It's March 13th, 2023. With me, as always, is Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing good, Rito. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. What you been doing the last, 72 hours?
72 hours?
Yeah. I would say, for me, I've been watching and playing in and then responding to the snowfall that we got. What did we get? We got around a foot in Bemidji, you know?
Yeah, my plow guy, Scotty, came by. And he plows all around this area. He said he'd been up since 3:30 in the morning and already burned through a full tank of his pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the second to the last on his list, and he was going to go crash. And this was around 2 p.m.
Wow.
But he said down by Cass Lake, he saw about 13 and a half.
No kidding.
And wow. Then I hear this Thursday and Friday, you're supposed to get another 8 to 10.
Well, I was just looking at it before I headed out to the Swamp Hill studio, and they had, at least the app that I was looking at, had downgraded to, because it was 9 or 10 inches over 3 days. And now they're calling 1 inch, 2 inches, 1 inch. So maybe now we're more on the periphery of this system, but it's out far enough that it's all subject to change.
This is the most snow we've had all year. It was starting to melt, and now the, where my plow guy comes and he pushes the snow, makes these big snow banks. Mm-hmm. This is the highest they've
never been. Never been that. Yeah. Yeah.
They're
driving in, it is a tunnel.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. Sometimes when you're driving in a city and you get put into that where there's just one lane and there's those cement separators or dividers or whatever on either side of you, that's what it is coming up here.
Well, at least
only those things you bounce off
of. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
If you go too far. Actually, I don't know. I think the snowbanks on the sides, they're kind of like bumpers.
Yeah, they're so high. If you drove into that, you'd go up and then come right back in, I bet.
Yeah.
Huh.
You want to try it?
Sounds like a dare. I have a snowblower, I believe that's from the 70s, and it runs, and it rattles, but it runs, you know, and it really rattles a lot, and it's been getting more and more tired, and I threw a belt on it, and I see the belt got chewed up, figured wore out belt on a very old machine. I bring it to my guy, and then I left town, and the next day, the day after I dropped it off, he called me in the morning and said it was ready. And I was really surprised they had gotten to it so soon. But all they had to do was replace a belt, you know. I get it back, and it turns out it's running great, you know, and the snow, I'm dealing with the snow, having a good time, and it's blowing where I'm pointing the thing to blow it or whatever. And then I threw the belt again. And when I opened it up, and I assume this happened after my guy had replaced the belt, but I busted off the tensioner. It just, I can see some sheared metal. And a piece that's missing a piece. And I'm pretty sure that the two things used to touch each other. And now there's a span about 6 inches where there's nothing. But I got it. I kept it running. And I did my whole driveway twice with it.
Well, you know, the last podcast, you talked about how you went out there with the shovel. And you said, this wasn't so bad. And you actually were pretty proud of yourself for the job you did.
This is a lot more snow, right? So, and I mean, I did it twice, 12 hours apart or so. And it was, I'm glad that I did that and didn't wait because my tired machine, I had to bring it places, to help other people out or whatever, where the snow had sat a while and it just couldn't do it. It's so tired. It's missing pieces. And the belt is just flapping in the wind. It's crazy. But I got most of what I wanted done. Most of it done. Not all of it, though. Yeah.
So you said you were out of town while your blower was getting fixed. What were you up to?
Oh yeah. So I went down to St. Paul for Homeless Day on the Hill, which was on March 8th. So last Tuesday. That was Wednesday. I drove down on Tuesday. And so like we all got together. So, the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless puts this on, and as the executive director of the Nameless Coalition for the Homeless here in town, you know, outside of my political life, I do have a professional life also. and I'm the executive director of the Nameless Coalition, and we operate an overnight shelter and a day center. And so we are members of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. And once a year we have Homeless Day on the Hill when we go and advocate for resources from the state government. And this year with the DFL having the trifecta, we are in a position to really get a once in a generation investment in the shelter system in Minnesota. It's really amazing. There's a bill that we were specifically there to promote, but the Thursday before, which was at like the 2nd of March, the House passed the bill, you know, 5 days before or 6 days before we got
the
down there.
The one you were going down to lobby
for? We were
going to
lobby, yeah. And it was almost exactly what we were asking for. There is one difference in the amount of money that they're putting into a fund for one-time capital improvements on shelters. So, like, our shelters will be applying for some of this money to paint the exterior of a shelter or whatever, to do like nuts and bolts, you know, upkeep. It's a little bit less than what we asked. Other than that, it's a great bill. And so
you went down there and the party was already over?
Well, we have a bicameral system, so we still got the Senate needs to pass it, and the Senate will pass something, but we want to make sure that it's at least this good or better, because then the Senate passes their version, the House passed theirs, and then it'll go to what's called a conference committee, where representatives from each chamber will negotiate the differences and then bring it back to each chamber to ratify again. So the least amount of space between one version and the other, the better it is, and the easier, smoother it is to just go through. If there's wild disparities, then sometimes a bill can get gutted, you know, because in a compromise, you know, or whatever. So keep them similar. But what the state, what the House did was wonderful. And so I went to speak to our senator, Steve Green, and going in, I knew that both Matt Bliss and Matt Grossel, and we'll get to Grossel Watch later, but we are going to reference it right now, where Grossel voted against the House bill, the House file, I guess they call it, that was this investment in shelters throughout Minnesota. Matt Bliss voted against it. He's the representative, the Republican representative that represents the other half of our Senate district, right? So just a quick civics. We have a Senate district that Bemidji is in, Red Lake is in it, Manoman, and, you know, so White Earth and Leech Lake and everything in between. It's probably the poorest district in the state, I imagine, or very, very close, but probably the poorest, you know. Lots of poverty, lots of housing issues, and Matt Bliss and Matt Grossel vote against it. It will be money, and it passed, so the money will still come up. But if the Matts had their way, this funding wouldn't exist, wouldn't have happened. And it's going to enable the Wolf and the new day center to be able to operate and pay their staff living wages and really give the have a facility that gives people some dignity or whatever. And they voted against it. So we went down there. We talked to Steve. I went there. I went to talk to Senator Steve Green. I assumed that I would be the only person from his district there. And I was a little bit nervous because we're you know, he's a friend of Matt Grossel, who I ran against. And again, Grossel voted against this bill. So I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be an antagonistic, you know, meeting if it's just the two of us. I got to his office and there were three women there who were from, I always say it wrong, Mojave Atwa. It's the CAP agency, the Community Action Program for like Hubbard and I'm embarrassing myself. Polk, DL is in Polk County, but in that area. So they were there, and at least Park Rapids and Hubbard, that's in the district. So we talked to him. It was pretty good. He listened to us.
So you were in a group. You weren't by yourself.
I wasn't by myself.
It wasn't a one-on-one.
Yes. There ended up being about 12 of us because there were the three gals from Mojave, and then some college students from UMD came, and they're from Bemidji, and they were taking a course called Homelessness and Public Policy. So they were there just taking notes to write a story or write a report or something. It was awesome. And then some women from Minneapolis that represented some shelters in Minneapolis and just talking about the need of shelter support overall. It was a really great crowd. And I think we gave Senator Green some food for thought. I really do think he listened to us. I don't expect him to vote for it, but I think we did give him something to think on. So,
but there's no risk it's going to fail. I mean,
no, it will pass, and it passed the House on a bipartisan vote. That's why it was so upsetting that the two House members that are representing the poorest people, in the state voted against it on some kind of moral hazard principle, I suppose, you know, I don't know. Also what else though is going on at the state? I wanted to talk about, well, I guess, you know what it might be time for.
Really?
I don't know. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Wrestlewatch. Come on, you bunch of crowning sons of bitches. Haul me to jail.
There's a couple of bills. Well, we mentioned the one, the Pathways to Home was the bill. And that's House File 444. The Senate companion bill is, now this is a lot of homework, people. I need you to write this down. The Senate file, the Senate companion bill is Senate File or SF388. Again, it's Pathways to Home. Heather Keeler, Representative Heather Keeler, authored the House file, and she is an amazing representative. We're lucky to have her. I see her as who represents our needs right now, because we have, this is Grossel Watch, right? Grossel ain't doing it, right? He votes against everything that'll benefit us, you know? So I'm glad to have Heather Keeler over in Moorhead representing us. She does a great job. But then we had also the capital investment bill. There are two bills. I think it's House File 699 and House File 700, because they're piggyback files. One is through bonding. Every other year, usually the state of Minnesota passes a bonding bill. So this is a $1 billion bonding bill. And then alongside it is a 400, I think, or 500. No, it's a $1.5 billion bonding bill and a $500 million spending bill. So that means they're spending part of the surplus, right? And this is investing in things like city parks across Minnesota, like wastewater treatment facilities, other sorts of like nuts and bolts that bonding bills often, maybe a water tower repair somewhere, a street renewal in a small town. Really important money. And we haven't passed a bonding bill in a while because the Republicans were continually like blocking things from happening. Right. So finally now we're able to spend this money. Guess who voted against it? Yes, he did. And there are several million dollars that will be going to Bagley, assuming that the Senate passes a similar bill, which usually they're pretty tight. And if it passes one, it passes the other. So Bagley is going to get this money, and Grossel no longer represents Bagley, but he did for three terms. And now here he doesn't get it. And it goes to going to other struggling communities, really important work. And he votes against it. You know, I did not go and talk to him because the bill had already been passed through the file, through the House. And so there's really no point to go to talk to him about it. He voted against it. What am I going to go there and like shame him or whatever? You know, I don't know. So I didn't do that. but he just continues to frustrate. He wasn't at the state of band of the band address in Red Lake, that happened on Friday last week. One of the most important things, I mean, that their economy impacts our county. It is such a huge, like, economic driver to the county, to his district, and he ignores them largely. He'll do a couple of things, you know, to remind them that he's there, but not a lot. I don't think he really stands strong on, like, tribal sovereignty issues and things like that. So I guess, I mean, from my perspective, which some may call biased, I don't think that I would, but from my perspective, it just seems like he fundamentally doesn't really care much about his constituents. I mean, I wonder to him, who is his constituency? What is his constituency? And it just isn't
like 5 mile radius from his home.
Yeah. Which isn't even safe now with the state troopers driving around, picking up a feller, just trying to drive home at 71 miles an hour at 3 a.m. I've got a casserole in the oven. I guess that's my Grossel watch for the...
What are the big bills that are coming up? I mean, are there any that we require his vote on?
For the most part, the Democrats have their agenda and they're going to pass their agenda. Where it affects District 2A, where it affects the people that are represented by Grossel right now, is that he has no clout, you know. He has no standing. Nobody cares what he has to say. He's usually running some kind, you know, he's usually talking about some kind of like culture war sort of topic and not really serious about governing. And so when these bills come forward, he's a no vote. They know that. So he's not there at the table. He's not making serious amendments or whatever. Were I to be there right now as the representative, you know, the bills are still going to pass, but I would have been there or another Democrat, but since I'm the one that ran against him or whatever, and hopefully we'll be running against him again, I would have been able to look at some of these bills and say, this is a great bill. I believe in it in principle, but here's something where I think it'll disaffect a rural county government, you know, or here's how I think it'll disaffect a rural family or worker or something like that. And so I can help tweak these bills to be more beneficial to us, to make sure, because right now there's not a lot of DFL representation from rural, you know, most rural communities, rural counties are represented by Republicans. But right now, while the DFL enjoys this majority, and we know that next cycle they're going to keep the governor, they're going to keep the Senate because they're not up, and so it's a great opportunity after all of these wins to kind of grow the majority, and so likely the GOP will not be in control of the House in 2024, you know, and so we need someone down there that can effectively represent us, you know. And again, that doesn't mean you win every vote and you get everything all the time, but
you're engaged in the conversation at least.
At the table, right? Yeah. And you can better, I mean, I know he missed a week. I forget what week. I think it was the week after his arrest. He missed like a week's worth of votes. I understand. And I'll, of course, we'll be following up and getting that timeline or down or whatever. But that's the difference, you know. Let's move on from that, though. Annie Huskerdu. That's I think a Norwegian and a Minnesota reference there.
It's a deep cut.
That's a deep. the county, what did the county do? Before we talk about any like county politics or policies or whatever, there's one thing that I really want to say. And I hope that if you started listening to the show, you're still listening right now. Right. If you know anybody that is basically on any sort of county assistance that had, COVID era waivers on paperwork and things like that, please know that a lot of that is coming to an end. So if you're on any kind of like what the one I know for sure is like Prime West, if you're receiving, your health insurance through Prime West, or in any way are on MA, right, the medical assistance or Minnesota Care, you need to talk to your county or to Prime West about how you, kind of re-up, because you need to, again, start to show your, income. They're starting to means test it again. So please look into that and get out in front of that and don't let there be a lapse in coverage, you know. And this is something that I really, I don't believe in means testing when it comes to programs. If you need a program, you should be able to avail yourself of it, because we spend more money means testing than we should on the program. So get that out of the way. So please, if you're getting any kind of economic assistance from the county or health insurance, or you know anyone that is, please reach out to them and figure out what you need to do to make sure that you don't lose it. That's the PSA. Okay.
Well, the big thing that I saw come out of the county meeting was this discussion on the tax forfeited land and then the encroachments. And I think we talked about this in a pod or boy, mm-hmm. a few times maybe, but
probably going back a ways.
Yeah. Right? Maybe before the break.
Yeah.
But it was about like landowners who built into county land either accidentally mm-hmm. or by a mistake of their mm-hmm. own of thinking where the property lines were. Mm-hmm. And so there was this discussion about the price that they would assess people for doing this, because you don't want to just do market value and make it just easy for people to build into that and then later mm-hmm. buy that as an expansion of their property. But what do you know about that?
Well, yeah, I this was an issue. I was on it's called the Land Review Committee. Commissioner Anderson and I were on it together. I know he's still on it now. I don't know who his second is, but we meet basically once a year and we look at parcels. There are parcels, a lot of times they're vacant lots or they're land out in the country that whoever owned it no longer saw a commercial value in it and basically just ditched it, stopped paying taxes on it. So then it goes into tax forfeiture and the county takes it over. Rarely is it anything that, well, yeah, most often it's not anything that anyone wants, because if anyone wanted it, they would have paid the taxes. And, you know, and there's some like maybe someone passes away and or maybe they're ailing for a long time and living in poverty and they're not paying their taxes on their parcel and then they pass away. And then when the family takes over the estate, there's this lien on it. And the family doesn't want to pay the lien or can't pay the lien, which is a sad situation. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. But usually it is very decrepit properties or raw land with no commercial value, swamps or land that is landlocked where there's no road that accesses it. Ends up in the county's hands. They throw it on the market as often they can. They usually try to auction it off. If it doesn't auction it off, they'll approach an adjacent landowner and say, hey, you want this? Because, you know, at a certain point from the perspective of the county, we'd rather have it on the tax rolls. Like, we'll basically, you can have it for a quarter of its value, but then you have to pay taxes on its full value going forward. And then after X amount of years, now we're finally bringing in revenue. So there's that. And then the other side of it is these encroachments where people maybe buy a 40 that is surrounded by state land or county managed land. And for whatever reason, they build their house right on a border so that their deck is on public land and their garage is in public land and their septic mound is on public land, you know? And then maybe also all of the trees from that porch down towards the open water and the wetlands, all those trees are chopped down magically somehow, you know? And then what's our remedy to that? So someone built not knowing, you know, it's the sort of thing where they knew or should have known that they were building on some on state land or public land. And then someone, I don't know who, but I would allege that it was perhaps the people that had the view from the porch chopped down all the trees all the way down to the, not really a lake, more of a pond. And what's our recourse for that? We sell them the land. You know,
I hope we sell them for a ton of money and make them
pretty much just market value. Pretty much.
They're not, there's no fine for doing that or.
It's as we've talked about before, if you have money, it's a civil offense. If you don't have money, it's a criminal offense. So this is a civil offense. Do we really know what was in the head of the person that maybe he thought it was his? You know, I think that Commissioner Anderson said, my dad would say a normal person. I think Richard Anderson said a reasonable person would have their land surveyed before they put structures up that were worth tens of thousands of dollars. You know, that's just a normal, it's like caveat emptor, right? The buyer beware. And here we are bailing out the buyer for things that he knew or should have known. You know, any reasonable person would say he knew or should have known where his property line was before he put in a septic, before he put in a garage with a slab foundation, you know, before he put in a deck, you know, before he built the house, he should have known where the property line was. That's just due diligence. And the fact that he didn't know should not have been our fault. And we should have made him rip everything out. Everything that was over the line, he should have had to rip out. That's my opinion. But no, we just then the compromise is to make him pay for the land, you know. And there's I don't know, it frustrates me that we allow that to happen. We should have it be restore it back to where it was, you know. It's not our fault that you trespassed. You know, I think I just bought some land. If I came home one day and someone had logged half of it and like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize that was yours. Hey, tell you what, I'll pay you for the acreage. Like, no, I want my woods back, you know. So that's that.
What was interesting about this meeting was that there were so many people that came up during the public input portion. I think there was 5 or 6 people. The first one. I hadn't seen in a while. That was Nancy Bulio.
Yep.
And she was there to invite the commissioners to join a Treaty 101 program that she was putting on.
Yep. And she's done this in the past. I think that I don't know if she's doing it online or how she's doing it, but I think I participated once. But it is, I do appreciate that she wants to do that to encourage our county commissioners to look into what the treaties are, you know, that exist between Red Lake, Leech Lake, White Earth, you know, our neighbors and ourselves. And, you know, so I'm glad that she did that. Yeah, it's been a couple of years since she's done that.
And then there was like 5 other people. I was excited to see so many people at the public comment period, but all of them turned out to be township officials, either township chairman, share
township
people,
supervisors.
And they were upset about a increase in county services for plowing and grading the roads in their township. And I think it was either the last meeting or the meeting before, the board approved a recommendation from their, what do you call it, roadworks?
Highway engineer.
The highway engineer to move to a annual fee based on miles within the township rather than an hourly fee, which they've been charging before. And when you compare the two, it was quite a dramatic increase. I think some of the people that spoke at the public comment period were saying up to 40% increase from previous years to this year. So they were letting their opinions be known.
Yeah. And I kind of feel a couple of different ways. Isn't that, didn't Nixon say, I feel both ways about that or something like that? You know, I feel both ways about this important issue. Townships have very limited, especially the super rural townships have super limited budgets. You know, they're not a lot of taxpayers, not a lot of parcels there. And so a 40% increase in the plowing, because they don't own, you know, graders, bladers and stuff. And if they can't find someone commercially to do it, they go through the county. And to have a significant increase, I can see that being a challenge. One township was saying this cost is going from $8,000 a year to probably about $14,000 a year. And that's, you know, and then you think as a taxing authority, what's $6,000 to you or whatever, you know, but to a rural township with not a lot of people, not a lot of parcels, a lot of swamp, a lot of state land or county managed land, you may only have an annual operational budget of like 50,000-60,000. So I get that. Because I was on the county board for so long, then I'm like, well, what is the true cost? What's the cost of the county? And if the county realizes that it needs to increase its price a little bit, you know, it's not for nothing. So this is our speed round episode. If you're out for a 5-minute walk, but it takes 10 times longer, this episode will fit into that walk of the city.
Yeah.
We're moving. This is a smooth transition. Mm-hmm. I know that tonight, although I've been here with you, so I wasn't at the meeting, but tonight the city was talking about an MOU, a memorandum of understanding with Northern Township, right? And for those of you that are geographically disinterested or disinclined, Northern Township is the township conveniently just to the north of the city of Bemidji. They've got,
give us a landmark. What are we talking about?
So Northern Township, well, we're going to talk about Rutgers. So Rutgers Resort at the north end of the lake.
Golf course is there.
State Park, the Gold Coast there, that all those homes between the State Park and Old 71. They have a lot of challenges when it comes to the Gold Coast there, where you have basically Rutgers, the resort. I forget the family that bought the LLC or whatever, the business that bought Rutgers from the Rutgers, from Randy Rutger. We have talked before about the shoreland management ordinance, right? This is a county ordinance that manages shoreland. Bemidji, Lake Bemidji, is actually exempt from that ordinance because it's inside the joint planning area. And so it's under its own ordinance that is set by the city and Northern Township in tandem or whatever. They comprise the Greater Bemidji Area Joint Planning Board. So the township wants to bring water from the city, so city water, city sewer, into Northern Township because it is well known now that Rutgers Resort's septics are not working. And there is potentially a serious runoff into the lake, right? Nutrients, right? Human poop going from toilet flush to Lake Bemidji with not enough intermediary steps that is required by science and good sanitary practice, right? So they got fined $13,000 back in February, I think, or January, something like that. For non-compliance, and we're given until a certain point to remedy the non-compliance. And I don't know if they have, but the fact that they were out of compliance is kind of what led this talk about bringing the water around, because they petitioned the city to bring city sewer and water to them, which we should. You know, I'm really upset with the new owners. And now I think they've been there 5 years. I'm upset with them for having dallied this long. But we should bring them sewer and water. But with that comes citizenship, right? You become a member, a resident, or a parcel inside the city limits of Bemidji. My opinion. I don't know where the city council is going on this. It's really important.
So this is all part of that annexation conversation, right?
That's been going on for, yeah, yes. So does the city bring resources out, you know, infrastructure outside of its city limits? You know, and Northern says, hey, we'll partner with you. We'll create a sewer district and then we will buy the water from you and pay you for taking the sewage back.
Well, they continue to argue about it. I mean, what are the big issues on either side? I mean, it sounds like they don't want to be a part of Bemidji. Northern doesn't want to be.
Well, I think, yes, Northern doesn't want to be a part of Bemidji. And especially those there's a everybody thinks that if you're inside the city, your taxes are going to go way up. And door knocking, I have talked to Northern residents that have been annexed in and they say your taxes, they went up a little bit, but maybe $50, $100, maybe more if you have a multi-million dollar estate, you know, then it could go up tens of thousands, I suppose. I don't know. But they should be part of the city. If we're going to bring that infrastructure in, even if we're basically like leasing it to the township, you know, and township pays for it, but it's plugged into our system. When things go south, you know, they can walk away, but we can't, you know, it's our system. So we should own it. And if you're on our system, you are us, you're in the city.
Are you saying they got to figure out this whole annexation thing before they can even start talking about doing this?
They're talking, I don't know what they're coming up with today talking about it, but I don't think it's going to work. I think it's going to flop because there's too many different ways it can all go south. And once it's hooked up to the city line, the city will end up holding the bag one way or the other.
So until all that plays out, there's poop floating in the lake.
Yeah. Yes. Well, unless the PCA, I don't remember what the terms of the PCA were with Rutgers, but with them specifically, I think that they have to comply. So I don't know. I would.
Or pay fines.
I suppose pay fines. But if I, you know, I used to go in sauna there all the time and I stopped my membership. Now I don't think you can even get a membership there. But I used to go swimming there all the time. My family would come and stay there. And until I know that they've taken care of that, I wouldn't want my siblings to bring their children, their babies up here and have them swim, you know, in the water up there. So until I know that they've cleaned it up and the Department of Health and the Pollution Control Agency give it their stamp of approval. Otherwise, it's tough. And so I caution the city about extending services outside of the city. We did it once before. We've probably talked about it on this show before, but we did it once before up in a northern township and we were in litigation for a decade.
So you're encouraging them to get involved, but you're cautioning the city to do it.
The city should, we should bring water around. Yes. But if the city is going to bring water around, then it brings it through the city, which means that everybody on the coast there, on the north shore of Lake Bemidji, and probably then in the north, would be the northeastern, because we'd want to bring it all the way around. Everybody then on Wavell and what's the Lavinia, all that comes into the city with sewer and water, and we save the lake. You know, that's what needs to happen. You know. And then we admit that we are a city on the lake. So,
of course, the other thing that happened in the city was the ongoing drama with city manager Nate Matthews.
I think that we can sum it up. I'm not going to, I get so worked up sometimes, you know, like watching the meetings, you just get, it's like watching a football game. You're like, why are you calling that play? You know, I will sum it up to say that back at the, I think it was the last meeting or the meeting before that, council member Ron Johnson said, you know, I don't really remember ever needing an attorney to do an employee review of the, of the of the of the city manager, but okay. so now they have they are retaining, they're going to spend up to $10,000 or $6,000
again. Yeah, well, the mayor was saying that he proposed a he proposed spending $10,000. I think the attorney's fee was actually $6,000, and then the other $4,000 was in case things went one way or another.
Okay,
they could reserve them for those contingencies. Right. Also, the mayor ended up saying $6,000.
Is it going to be like available through like pay-per-view? Well, or whatever? Okay,
so here's the if you remember last time, Nate was out sick; he wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was all these questions. He had put forth a process for his evaluation as per the contract.
Yeah.
And so we sent it there, and there, it was ambiguous to some of the council members about what some of this language meant. And because he wasn't there, it didn't give them a lot of chance to ask questions, right? So at that meeting, they also voted to retain counsel to oversee the evaluation process, right? And so when he came back at this meeting, he was there, and so those questions were still there. And so they directed them to Nate to clarify. I think a lot of them were around the those one-on-one meetings, you know, and making sure that they weren't mandatory but optional, which of course they would have been. And he says, basically, you guys need to decide if you've retained counsel for this process, because if so, which is what you voted on the last time,
I'm not talking to you.
I can't answer your question.
I'll talk to your attorney.
Right.
Right. My counsel will talk to your counsel.
It was so ridiculous. Here he was having the opportunity to clarify his proposal for his own evaluation. And he was unable to answer.
Because they hamstrung him and themselves in the in the previous meeting by being injudicious or whatever.
It's so bizarre.
It's, yeah, they're not having fun, and they're totally, I don't know. I think I said this in the last episode. When I think of Nancy and I never getting along, Roger and I personally getting along, but never voting with each other. Well, Nancy too, although she drove me nuts sometimes, but so did Roger. But like, this level of like trepidation where nobody wants to do anything without consulting an attorney first. Like, what are you afraid of? You have a simple job, and for the listeners out there, I may have said this in a past podcast, but we politicians, just like cops, have qualified immunity. You know, we can't be sued if we did something personally. We can't be sued personally if we did something in the commission of our job in good faith and weren't otherwise. I mean, there are, you know, if I'm committing a felony while I'm telling you I'm a commissioner, no, the
or
county
took a bribe or
something. If I, you know, committing a felony. So, I mean, there are limits to that, but if I'm passing policy or making decisions in good faith, I've got nothing to worry about. There's no need for it. And that's different from saying, well, if you did nothing wrong, what are you afraid of? No, it's like, this is a simple, normal thing that I've done 10 of them, and I never had counsel present in a way where it was adversarial or whatever. The counsel present was the city man or the city attorney or the county attorney. If they were even there, I don't even remember them necessarily being there. It's just
I feel
bizarre.
Like, we can imagine these scenarios all night long, right?
Yeah.
Well, will we ever know the result of these? I mean, those lawyer conversations are obvious.
It's privileged.
Yeah.
No, but I think at the end of the day, what is it all about?
Right. We may never know.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the reapportionment, with redistricting that happened a year ago.
This is just your
it's conjecture. this is my, I think, you know, I'm not even alleging. I'm just, I think this is what.
I think it's on DraftKings.com. The odds.
Are they? Finally.
We have a new sponsor.
Is it right? I think that there's bitter feelings about reapportionment and this being incorrectly blamed on Nate. And then I think that there's also like a misunderstanding of what a weak mayor system is, which is what Bemidji has. And I think that that is being held against Nate. So the very act of Nate doing his job is making certain people mad at Nate or what's the word? Resentful. They resent Nate, but they would resent any city manager in that position doing that job. He is doing the job. I mean, as I think we have said before, the city manager is basically the CEO of the city, and he answers to the board, which is the city council, and the mayor is like the chair of the board. But the CEO is still the CEO, which is the city manager, and needs to be allowed to do his job. So if you had anyone of any experience, any age, any sex or whatever, I think that this council would find objection with that person because they don't like the fact that they're in a weak mayor system. Is fundamentally, George wants to be the king, you know, or prince, even. He would settle for prince or strong mayor. But we're not a strong mayor system.
So I think where they left it was Katie, the attorney, was going to liaison with the other law firm.
Flaherty and Hood.
And make this proposal. So in the end, there was two motions that came out of this discussion, both from the mayor. One was to approve the process that Nate put forth for his evaluation. And I think that one passed. And then the second motion was to approve moving forward with a contract with Flaherty and Hood to guide the process of the evaluation with Nate, not to exceed $6,000.
And
that passed also.
And the mayor made both of those motions.
Yep.
Which is really, it's just so odd. He makes so many motions. It's just odd for the mayor to make the motions. It really is. It's odd for the mayor to lead like it's, that's.
Well, why?
It generally, the chair doesn't make a motion. Generally, the mayor doesn't make the motion. Because then I think it's about like amassing power or whatever. We have a weak mayor system. The mayor runs the meeting, and part of the norm, the tradition of the chair is to not make a motion unless nobody else does. And maybe nobody else in the room is, and there's silence. And then the mayor says, okay, well, because I don't hear anyone making a motion, I will try a motion. Is that how it happened?
No.
Yeah. Cause if that's where it's appropriate by norms, not well, and is a show well, me
he,
in the,
you know, he originally asked for $10,000 for the attorneys because it included, I think he said some, unexpected expenses may happen as a result of the initial $6,000.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. And, I mean, it's all just so bizarre. Yeah. Everything they're doing is bizarre to me.
And I just want to know in the end, after all this dust settles, what it was all about. And we may never know.
Well, and
all the wasted time.
Is it any better for the city? Are the residents of the community any better off for this stuff that, I mean, I don't see myself as like a member of the establishment, but watching these guys, I'm clinging to basic democratic norms or norms of what I remember the city council doing, you know, and seeing them, sometimes you deviate from norms in a good way and you do good things because the norms were broken. But this is unmoored, you know? Cities' responsibilities are very well established in the state constitution. Our charter is just a few pages. I think it's 6 or 7 pages, you know. It's very clear cut what we do. And this stuff that they're doing is just not in there anywhere, you know. Like what is your end game here? What's at the end of this rainbow that you're creating, you know, or chasing, you know? And I'm at times I'm just absolutely flabbergasted.
It's like 6D chess, man.
But it's not. It's not. It's like it's stupid chess. It's just
you're not seeing it.
Yeah, because there's nothing to see. It's just, we've said this before, and I'll say it again. It's pettier and dumber than we can imagine. You know,
I can imagine really pretty is. Petty and dumb.
Well, I will say, okay, it's pettier and dumber than we can imagine in that we cannot, in a way that we cannot imagine. Maybe you can imagine something stupider. For sure you can. But you can't imagine this petty, this particular petty, right? If that makes sense. I mean, it's just, I don't think that none of this is going to get an extra mile of road paved.
Anything else in the city that got you?
I didn't even want to do this, Rob.
Yeah.
So no. No, there's not anything more in the city.
All right. So I'm doing a little throwback here.
Oh.
My favorite topic of this cycle here came from Commissioner Tim Sumner, who asked Greg Gosvig, who had just given his airport commission report, if he knew anything about the number of airplanes that mm-hmm. had been flying over Red Lake. And Tim had said, and I don't know if this is true or not, that Red Lake is a no-fly zone and there shouldn't be any aircraft over it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't think Greg on the Airport Authority Commission had any response to that, but he said he had heard those rumors too.
Okay.
Do you know anything about this?
Well, I did. Because I saw it on, maybe it was a post I think that Tim texted me or I saw a post of his. I also saw some other posts. I think if you look at my Twitter feed, and friend me while you're there. Why not? I don't know. But I think you'll see that I think, is that true? I don't know. Friend me anywhere, follow me anyways. But someone asked on Twitter, what's up with these planes flying over? This is like a month ago. And someone, I found someone that captured the flight record of one person or one plane that was flying overhead. Cause you can look that up. It's all public information. And this, it was a person's face, you know, I think it was a person's name, and he had a business where he was an aerial photographer. But that was one. And it seems like there were many, many planes, more than, I'm not saying 20, but maybe a dozen that were flying overhead, like at all hours of the day and night.
Well, I can imagine if it was a, like a aerial survey plane or something,
right,
where you would fly a pattern.
Right.
You know,
but something like that would have been coordinated with the state or the county or the tribe. And if they were going, if it was that kind of a survey being done, they surely would have notified the tribe and probably the county too, that it was happening. And the fact that neither the county nor the tribe nor the airport knew what was going on. But what did Craig say that he could verify that it wasn't a private plane?
He said that he saw, he had heard that too, he said to Commissioner Sumner. And from what he had seen, these were not private flights.
Yeah, and I don't know
how, I don't know what that means. Like, these weren't sightseeing.
Yeah. They ain't up here whistling Dixie, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just one of those weird...
But I can't say more because they don't know more.
It's classified.
Yeah, it seemed like they were doing aerial photography, which in its own right might be surveillance. I mean, that is...
Well, when I think if it's not private, it means it's public. And that, to me, says it's like a government or military.
I think you could also, though, in that statement saying that they weren't private...
They were commercial.
They were commercial. That it wasn't just a guy up in his Cessna. That it was this, and that's just saying, like, I saw that there was a company that is aerial photography. So it is a guy that owns a business, but is that a private flight or a commercial flight? You know, if he's doing aerial photography, it's a commercial flight, or not commercial flight, like flying people. It's a side hustle. There you go. I don't know. Half of what I find out from that. Easily 7% of what we say in any given episode is nuanced to the point of maybe not being totally accurate.
Do your own research.
Yes. This is a launch pad for ideas.
So I think that kind of wraps it up for us, huh?
I'm running away from this episode, man. I came here. I was going to be here for 20 minutes. I was only here trying to catch a bus.
It's the time change.
It's got everything. Well, got to rejigger everything. Did you know that if you emailed us and told us how we are right or wrong at redoroundup@gmail.com, that's redoroundup@gmail.com. Tell us all of the many wonderful things we're doing and all of the ways that we are awful and should be asking you all for forgiveness. Anyways, thank you everyone for listening. This is our abridged episode, coming in at a mere 3 hours and 17 minutes, one of our shortest on record. Joe Rogan ain't got nothing on us. As always, our theme song is brought to us by the Jake Baldwin motif. Thank you, Jake. I have little else to say. I have a plane to catch.
You're heading south.
In a week.
No.
I am. I'm going to miss. Oh, boy.
This week.
Yeah. Yeah. Our episodes are all messed up now. It's going to take us a while to catch up.
Well, you got your sat phone with you. I'll call you in the desert.
Need water.
Yeah.
Water. And don't bring infrastructure into Northern without annexation. With that being said, we love you.